episode 5 of Nuggets for Witnesses, where we serve up canape-sized bits of clinically useful knowledge on a platter of fond memories. I'm Marcus Taylor.
And I'm Issa Fan. And I would say canape, but, you know, from both sides of the equator, we are show hosts, so maybe in Finland you pronounce it differently. Well, Melbourne's warming up, as I'm sure Helsinki's cooling down, but what else is new in Finland, Marcus?
Well, apart from Esther making me say words I can't say on this podcast, it started snowing here, so I almost fell off my bike because I decided I'd just keep biking in the snow, which I probably wouldn't recommend to most people.
Not OH&S approved.
I'm getting used to the whole living in the snow thing, so that's been cool. I got COVID 2 weeks ago.
Oh.
So I was pretty sick. It was like for 2 days I was like in bed with fever and like muscle aches, just felt super weak, didn't really have an appetite. And then after that, things got better and it felt more like a bad cold with a pretty bad cough. Yeah, I got vaccinated. My last shot was in July. Like, it was only 4 months and a week after my last vac shot I worked out. So I think maybe your immunity does start to fade, like they say. But I mean, I think being vaccinated, you're less likely to go to ICU or have serious symptoms. So I guess that was the good part. And so, yeah, that's been my last few weeks anyway.
That's so scary. Yeah, I hope you have just complete recovery. And everyone else, please stay safe. Today's topic actually has to do with a bit of safety.
That's right. We're going to be talking about dogs that pull on their leads. We've all seen those ever too keen dogs taking their owners for a walk down the street. At best, it looks like a workout for the poor human. At worst, these situations can result in owners sustaining shoulder injuries or falls. And actually, the other thing is sometimes the dog can rip free of people's grip and go like attack another dog, which I've seen happen too.
Yeah. Sometimes I hear that only the male owner can take Rocky the Rotty for a walk, because with all the pulling and the lunging, it's simply not safe for the kids or the nana or the mother with the pram to do so. But Dad is often at the office. Pre-COVID, he was at the office. Remember that thing? And so Rocky doesn't get as much exercise. So he's extra excited on his short walks and pulls even harder. And it's like a vicious cycle.
Time to recommend head collars. These are exactly as they describe. Collars that go around the head. The strap goes over the nose and one goes behind the ears. The lead is attached under the chin. When the dog pulls, pressure is exerted on the bridge of the nose and they slow down. In this way, you can have much more control. The common brands are Gentle Leader, Easy Walk, Spawn, and Halti. Even though we're not affiliated with any of these brands, we'll post pics of them on our Instagram for you to get an idea.
Yeah, the best way to explain the concept came from my very first vet nurse, Haley. I've regurgitated it hundreds of times to clients, and it really convinces them. She always used to say, if you want to control a horse, what do? You put a halter on its head, and you can lead it wherever you want it to go. How do you get a horse to pull a cart? You place it in the harness and it uses its whole body weight to pull the cart along. So it's the same principle with dogs. If we have control of the head, we have control of the dog. If we put a harness on them, we basically have the force and momentum of 10, 20, 30, 40 kilos attached to the end of our now non-retractable lead.
It's important to let the owner know that it's not a muzzle. They can still eat, drink, and, well, bite actually as well with it on.
Yeah, some people don't like the look of them because they don't want to be judged with a dog in the muzzle.
Likewise, it doesn't hurt them. It just puts pressure on the nose, which is a much more sensitive part of the body than the neck, shoulders, or underarms. And actually, it's sparing the trachea as well. You know, those dogs that so you avoid that too.
That's right. It's also important to explain that dogs need to get used to the head collars. You can't just put one on and expect to take Rocky for a walk. Some clients come back and tell me, ugh, that didn't work. And when I ask them why, they say, ugh, because I put it on and he freaked out and ripped it off and chewed it up and now it's gone. I'm like, of course it didn't work. So you need to show it to them, give them a treat, show it to them, give them a treat over and over again. Then you need to rub it against their face and give them a treat, and then drape it over their neck for 5 seconds, give them a treat, put it on for 10 seconds, take it off, give them a treat. You get the idea. Just do everything really slowly and with lots of positive reinforcement.
Sometimes head collars can fall off if the dog puts its head down or paws at it too much. So you still need to place a harness or collar and run a second lead. Or else some brands have a clip that can attach to a collar or harness.
In Australia, head collars are about $30 to $45. I tell clients it's less than the cost of a physio appointment when your dog pulls your shoulder out of joint. It's their choice. I always tell people just to give it a go. In my experience, 95% of owners who train their dogs to use it don't look back.
Lastly, many of these brands also make no-pull harnesses, where the lead is attached to the front of the chest. These also put pressure on the dog to discourage pulling, but the pressure is around the armpits or back, which is much less sensitive than the nose. They are the next best thing to head collars and can work well for dogs that, for example, don't accept the head collar, or for brachiocephalic dogs who have no nose for a head collar to be putting any pressure on.
That's right. Head collars are really one of the best inventions since sliced bread. They've literally changed clients' lives. I remember I was once treating a very boisterous, about 35-kilo, 2-year-old black lab, Barney, who had cut his foot. He belonged to an older couple, and they brought him in each week for bandage changes. I could see and hear him from a distance as he walked the length of the pet shop to get the clinic, which was at the back of the store. And it was always the male owner holding the leash, and Barney was always dragging him along. So I did suggest a gentle leader head collar, explain how to use it. And what do you know? The next week, his little petite wife was walking Barney into the store, cool as a cucumber, and she said she'd never been able to walk him anywhere on her own until now.
That's so good. I love that. Just note, not all dogs will accept the change as fast as that, and some dogs need actual behaviour training if the problem isn't just pulling. But there are many more simple success stories like this waiting to be created.
Created by you. So, with that done and dusted, let's move from successes to failures. Last episode, we promised more of our favourite fails. Today's reports stem from the large animal side of town.
They sure do. What do you have for us, E?
So there was this one time I was sent to a farm to remove the eye of a calf. I'd been treating it for pink eye, which is actually a contagious form of conjunctivitis that can run rampant through the herd. We learned about conjunctivitis last podcast, so look that up if you haven't listened to it already. This calf's eye hadn't responded and subsequently exploded. That's definitely a technical term, explosion. And we decided it should be removed. The farmer had left this calf and her companion in the yards for me. Usually farmers or farm workers will be present for most vet calls, but doing things alone was also not uncommon. I unpacked all of my gear and set up the race and herded them towards the head bale. And I can't remember what malfunctioned, if something didn't catch properly or if the gate was open or broken or just too big for, say, 70-kilo calves to be caught in, but I sort of watched in horror as they did a hop and a skip and a jump as they do and broke through the head bale into the paddock, into freedom. Now, let me describe this more. This is a dairy farm where the fences are like dental floss, electric tape, held up by toothpicks. And calves of this size can simply duck under the wire, so they were effectively loose in the entire farm. At first, I chased them on foot, which, of course, was a really stupid idea. So then I jumped into my truck and did, like, these baby burnouts, trying to herd them back into the yards to no avail. They actually made it all the way to the site where a new milking shed was being built. I was so grateful to see other humans that I pulled up and yelled for someone to help me catch these calves, but all they said was, "Sorry, we're just here to build the shed, eh?" and got back to their, like, concreting and dirt shoveling and everything. So I think I was in tears as I rang the farmer and told him what had happened, but he was so nice. He was about my age, and we played touch rugby together, and he was like, "All good, Esther, you know, don't worry, just leave them, we'll catch them later, sweet as." And so I went back to the yards, picked up my stuff, and just headed back to the clinic.
Oh, sounds like he was very forgiving, which is good. Those construction workers are flipping hopeless.
They will not be forgiven.
No, they're the villains of the tale. Nah, that's your problem.
I know, we're just here to do one job and one job only.
I had a construction worker save my butt one time. A dairy cow fell into the centre pit of a rotary shed.
Mm.
And this isn't a fail story. This is actually like a construction worker saves the day story.
Okay.
And the guy came with this, well, we went and called him over and say, like, can you help us, me and the farmer? And this guy came with, I can't remember exactly what the thing, I think it's a telehandler, and it's got this long, like, proboscis, like, arm that comes out with a winch on the end, and he managed to like feed the thing into the dairy shed through all of these rails and stuff. And then I knocked the cow out with a pole syringe and we hooked her up to that, and we were able to like winch her out of the pit from the, like, the pit is like 3 meters deep, this big concrete pit in the middle of the rotary shed. We were managed to winch her out and get this whole cow like unconscious out of the pit and out of the dairy shed. That's not a fail story.
I just want to clarify, when Marcus said that he knocked out the cow with a pole syringe, it doesn't mean that he knocked it on the head with a pole. He actually used some drugs in a syringe attached to the end of a pole and jabbed the drugs into the cow's muscle.
Thanks for clarifying that I don't use baseball bats to knock patients out, Esther. I really appreciate you covering me there. Would have had the SPCA banging on my door in Helsinki. So my actual fail story, I had a kind of similar experience. I got stitched up by another vet to go debud calves. He was like, yeah, there's like 25 calves and they're like 4 weeks old. And I got there was like 90 of them, and they were from like a range of 2 weeks old to like 8 weeks old. And I only had one tech with me because I'd been told like it was a small job.
Oh my God.
But anyway, like, foolishly, I was like, well, they've already fasted the calves, I'll just do it instead of like calling for more help or doing it another day with just sending technicians to go do it. But basically, I like started doing it, and I like was just knocking out all these pens of calves. I was
with drugs,
not with a bat. And I went through and started jabbing them all, and basically the calves all just kind of like swarm and like run from one end to the other as you're going around jabbing them. One of the pens, like, they like knocked into the gate at the far end and like smacked it, like it just flipped off the hook and came completely open, and all of these calves started running across the whole farm, but they'd already been jabbed with the drugs, so they were all like tripping and falling and like half unconscious, like staggering everywhere, and basically they just like fell asleep, like scattered across not just the farm but like all around the person's house. Calf yards opened into like their veggie garden and their house and driveway, so like there were calves just falling asleep like everywhere, and I had to, like, I was like, we're covering this up, they can't find out this happens. So we started picking up all, I got just calves and carrying them back, and just as we got the last calf back, the farmer turned up, was like, how's things going? I'm like, oh, perfect, mate, like but it was an epic fail. These calves were just all over the show. So
then did you get to debud them all before they started actually waking up again?
Yeah, we pulled it off. It was admission. Yeah.
Well, at least you completed your job. Like, I didn't even know if I went back to take the eye out of that first calf.
Really? They just called the clinic down the road?
Well, do you know what? The next clinic was about, well, actually was owned by us about 40 kilometers away, and the next actual business was probably about 100 kilometers. So,
So we had. You had a monopoly, you're fine.
We did.
You had Mayfair and Park Lane. So,
speaking of too many head of cattle, I also remember we had this one problem farm that always had, I'm not even kidding, hundreds of lame cows, and that's not an exaggeration. And so for a stage, we'd have just one vet go out and spend the whole day working their way through these lame cows, just off to the side of the shed, putting them through a lame cow crush completely solo. And I remember if I needed some help, I'd kind of stand up on the railings and like wave and yell to, you know, hoping a farm worker on a four-wheeler would just see a damsel in distress and come to my aid. So one day I was just finishing a good 8 or so hours of backbreaking lame cow treatments, and I thought, oh, I can just squeeze one more cow in before I leave. So we use the contraption that secures the cow's head and neck at the front and straps under the belly, and then has pulleys to lift up one foot so you can examine the underside. So for the back hooves, you basically end up with your back towards the cow's bum and you bend over like you're picking out the hooves of a horse. And as I completed that sort of hacking away of the hoof and I went to let it down, I felt something warm and wet on my back, and it wasn't sweat. And I smelled that ever so sweet smell of cow urine as it made its way down the back of my legs and filled up my gumboots.
Oh, so it went down your back.
Down my back. Yeah, may or may not have soaked through my undies and into my gumboots.
Freaking gross, Esther.
If I wasn't exhausted and grumpy enough already, I was just so defeated after that. And I remember just packing everything up, sloshing my way over to the shed with a spare change of overalls and trying to find the toilet, which, of course, had no door because it's mostly guys that work in these sheds. And, you know, why would you guys need to urinate in private? I'm trying to dry off and hop my way back in bare feet to my truck and make my way home.
Oh, that sounds like an absolute disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's a really good time to sign off and leave our listeners pondering.
Me too. Can't get too comfy in a life, right? Don't forget to check out our Instagram where you can verify our stories, ask questions, answer our quiz questions, and leave your feedback.
If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we'd love your good ratings and reviews. Till next time, happy learning.
Happy learning.